From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh man, does it feel so good to be back. Yes, Current Sports is back here on this Monday, December 1st. Hey, it's December, folks. I can't believe that November flew by just like that. My goodness. I want to give a special shout out to my dog. And the reason I'm doing that is because it's my dog's birthday. Yes, a year ago today, my dog Chibale turns, she was born, and she was born on this day. So December 1st, is her birthday. Shout out to my dog. You dog numbers low when I'm talking about, okay? But hey, all right, other than my dog, we have a great show in store for you. We'll be recapping all of the weekend action that was over the Thanksgiving holiday, including the state championship games that led all three of our local high school football teams with L's. Yes, all three lost, Ithaca, Lansing Catholic, and Lansing Sexton. In just a moment, I'm going to invite Mike Cohan of MLive.com in the studio with me to recap everything that went down at Ford Field. We'll also talk about the Michigan State football team as they close out the season with 10 wins. What bowl will they be playing in? We'll discuss that. And also, the MSU men's basketball team, the soccer team. I mean, I could go on and on and on, folks. We have a jam-packed hour. So let's waste no time and jump into our quick hit headliners for this December 1st. All right, folks, let's start with MSU men's basketball. Perry Ellis had 17 points for Kansas and 9 rebounds to help Kansas beat Michigan State 61-56 Sunday in the championship game of the Orlando Classic. Now, in their other game against a top 25 team this season, the Spartans were beat on November 18th, 81-71 by number 4 Duke. Coach Tom Izzo is 4-2 against Kansas. Brandon Dawson had 8 points and 9 rebounds. Michigan State will now take part in the ACC Big Ten Challenge Wednesday night at Notre Dame. All right, Ariel Powers had 10 points and 10 rebounds and also 7 assists with 3 steals. And Anna Morrissey scored 17 as the number 16 Michigan State women's basketball team beat Miami of Ohio 85-39 on Sunday. Now, Powers recorded her 5th double-double of the season for Michigan State, which dominated the Redhawks in nearly every facet of the game except free throw shooting, where the Spartans were 7 of 19. Now, the Spartans shot a season-high 58.1% from the field in the first half, including going 5-for-9 from three-point range to build a 41-19 lead. All right, MSU football has moved up 3 spots to number 7 in the latest AP poll after knocking off Penn State on Saturday, 34-10 the final, from Beaver Stadium in University Park, Pennsylvania. Now, with the move up to number 7 in the latest poll, MSU matches its highest AP poll ranking of the season. MSU was ranked number 7 entering its September 6th matchup against Oregon. Now, the 3-spot lead has a lot to do with the 3 teams ahead of the Spartans, UCLA, Georgia, and Mississippi State, losing this past weekend. Oregon comes in at number 3, Ohio State is number 6, and Nebraska at number 25 as the only ranked MSU teams MSU faced this season. All right, Michigan State has earned an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament in women's volleyball and will pay Loyola Marymount in the first round on Friday, December 5th at Stanford. Now, the Spartans are making their 4th straight NCAA tournament appearance and bring a 5-game winning streak to Palo Alto next weekend. Now, the Spartans finished the regular season 18-13 overall and were 11-9 in the Big Ten Conference. MSU is making its 17th NCAA tournament appearance and earned its 4th consecutive at-large bid, folks. All right, MSU soccer, number 3 seeded MSU men's soccer team edged number 14 seeded Washington in penalty kicks 4-3. The Spartans tied the Huskies 2-2 in double overtime, posting a record of 12-4-6 on the season and advancing to the Elite 8 of the NCAA tournament. Now, this is the 2nd consecutive year the team has advanced to the Elite 8, advancing as the only Big Ten team left in this year's tourney. Now, Michigan State will continue to host as a top-seeded program into the Elite Eight. The Spartans will face either 11-seeded Providence or UC Irvine on Friday, December 5th at 1 p.m. All right, sad news coming out of Columbus, Ohio. Now, the body of missing Ohio State defensive lineman Costa Karageorge was found by Columbus police on Sunday after a search that started after he went missing on Wednesday. Now, Karageorge, 22 years old, was found dead in a dumpster of an apartment. Self-inflicted gunshot wound. He was identified by tattoos at the scene, and police spokesman said the investigation will continue with both the dumpster and the body of Karageorge being transported to the county morgue. Now, Karageorge had previously spent 3 seasons on the Ohio State wrestling team before walking on to help the defensive line on the football team back in August. All right, it's another W for Monet Davis. Sports Illustrated Kids named the Little League star is Sports Kid of the Year. Now, Davis, a 13-year-old honor roll student from Philly, became a sensation in August after leading the Taney Dragons to a 4-0 victory over Nashville, Tennessee. She is the first girl to win a Little League World Series game. She since has appeared on the cover of SI, has starred in a Spike Lee-directed car commercial, and has her jersey displayed in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And sad news coming out of UAB. University of Alabama Brigham is firing athletic director Brian Mackin and will announce later this week that it will be shutting down its football program, according to a source familiar with the matter. All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick and headliners for this December 1st. Hey, let's start the show. All right, folks, well, our phone lines will be open this entire hour. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet me at AlMartinWKR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of at WKAR_sports. Well, what a weekend it was, folks. I mean, I tell you what, I was glued to my television, my laptop, my iPad, my iPhone, just trying to keep up with everything that was going on from NFL Sunday to all of the college football action on Saturday. What a win for the MSU football team, closing things out at 10 wins. I mean, that's impressive. You know, it's so interesting because I tell you what, about 10 or 15 years ago, if you would have talked about Michigan State winning 10 games in a season, I mean, that would have been headline news. I mean, when the bus rolled into East Lansing, there would have been people greeting the team as they came in. It is so interesting to see how the expectations of this program have now shifted now, where 10 wins is kind of like, you know, ho-hum now. You know, it's kind of like, all right, Michigan State, that's all fine and dandy, but, you know, we expected more. Interesting stuff. Michigan State actually winning 10 games for 4 of the last 5 years, all, of course, under the Mark D'Antonio era. Really interesting stuff there. And then you go back to Thanksgiving. You know, the Lions also in action down at Ford Field. That's exciting stuff on Thanksgiving Day. By the way, folks, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving Day as well. We had a best of current sports on Thursday and Friday. But yeah, you got the Lions playing on Thursday. And then I had the privilege of actually going out to Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan. I was actually home in the D with the fam, eating turkey and mashed potatoes and, you know, collard greens and macaroni and cheese. I mean, I gained about 15 pounds over the weekend, I must say. I love Thanksgiving, folks. But while I was down there, you know, I decided to mix a bit of work and pleasure. Went down there actually on Friday and covered the Lansing Sexton and Ithaca football games. And again, as you heard to start the show, both Ithaca, Lansing Sexton, and even Lansing Catholic, who played on Saturday, all three of the local teams from Mid-Michigan taking home L's in the state championship games. I tell you what, though, quite a ride for all three of these teams. For me, probably the most surprising one had to be Ithaca. I mean, Ithaca High School, the longest winning streak in high school football, folks, being snapped at 69. They were going for their 5th straight state championship. Coming up just a bit short. And, you know, and then now going to the Lansing Sexton game. Actually, Ithaca played at 4:30 on that Friday. Lansing Sexton was the primetime game at 7:30. Lansing Sexton coming just a bit short. Just a bit short, folks. Quite the scene after that one. As time expired, I tell you what, there was not a dry, it was hard to find a dry eye on that Lansing Sexton Big Red team when things were all said and done. But quite the ride. I mean, Dan Bogan and that squad making it to Ford Field, the first time ever them making it to Ford Field. It was quite the moment being down there. You know, before we invite Mike Cohan of MLive.com, I want to play some bites from our coverage down there. Right now you're about to hear from head coach Dan Bogan of Lansing Sexton and Terry Hesper. Here's what they had to say after their games.
You know, I'm proud of my kids. They fought hard against a really good football team. And we're outstanding football team ourselves, and it could have went either way. I just disappointed, but you know, I'm not broken. You know, this life is it's going to be some tough times, and you just unfortunately as much as you want to win them all, sometimes you just can't. And you still got to keep your composure, especially in this arena. And, you know, there's a time for us to have some quiet time and I know break down a little bit. But now, right now, I'm asking a lot out of some teenagers, but I wanted them to know that they had to hold it together and not break down.
We were so sad because we've been playing. Our team is mostly seniors. So we've been playing with each other for 3-4 years, and it's just we'll never play with each other again. So just knowing, even if we would have won the game, I think we would have been still crying and all that, just because we love each other, we love one another, and it's just. But he was right that we had to keep our composure. We let our emotions get the best of us.
There's not a lot of people that expected the Ithaca Yellow Jackets to be here. You know, we graduated 9 starters on offense, and not to mention how many left us on defense. So I don't, you know, for these kids to, we had a whole bunch of new faces in there, And, you know, a lot of the year we started 10 underclassmen on both sides of the ball a lot of the year. And so, you know, the future is bright, but it's not about that. It's about what happened today and how hard our kids played today. It's been an unreal ride. It really has. And to win 69 consecutive games and 4 titles and to have a chance at your 5th, it was, I think it means a great deal to our community. It's a source of pride for our community. So many people, you know, were concerned about the streak, you know. And I have to admit that, you know, we as coaches and we as players weren't, all we were trying to do was win one football game today. And then if that adds to the streak, well, then so be it. But today we weren't good enough. We didn't make enough plays today.
Yeah, folks, again, that's Dan Bogan, head coach of the Lansing Sexton football team. Avante Bell is who you heard after him, and then you just wrapped it up with Terry Hesperick, head coach of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets. Again, folks, all three of the local teams, Lansing Sexton, Lansing Catholic, and Ithaca High School, all coming up just a bit short on the big stage down at Ford Field, trying to make their state championship dreams come true. Well, it's my privilege now to welcome a man who was also at Ford Field, Mike Cohan, MLive.com, prep sports writer. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing okay, Al. Yourself?
Very well, my friend. First off, I want to, you know, just talk about how shocking it is, you know, Ithaca, Lansing Sexton, and Lansing Catholic, all three teams losing at the big stage. I don't think any of us would have predicted that.
Yeah, even if only one of them had won, I'd be surprised. I really thought Sexton would have won. Ithaca and Lansing Catholic, I figured one of those two would probably win. I'm really surprised. I mean, even still, here it is on Monday, about 3 days after the first wave of games, the Ithaca and Sexton games, I'm still trying to take it all in. It really is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Of all those, I have to say the way Ithaca lost really surprised me.
Yeah, definitely. Me too.
And Sexton. We'll get to Sexton in a second. But, you know, Ithaca, I watched the first half at my hotel, and then I went over and watched the most of the third quarter and fourth quarter from Ford Field. And on my way between the two, I said, you know, Ithaca's not really playing the way that I've seen it play before. And you know, they kind of slowed down there in the second half and never gained momentum, didn't really look like they were in control of that game. And that was what really surprised me. If there's one thing we've seen from Hesperick's teams over the years, it's an ability to pick it up. and charge forward, and they did not do that. I don't know why. I can't really explain it other than they just didn't have it.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Mike, part of the reason when looking at this Ithaca football team, something that really stuck out to me, when you look at their roster, they are a very, very young team. And that's something that, and you talk about battling from behind. Ithaca, one of the hallmarks to their success in past years that led to the whole streak and the back-to-back-to-back state championships is that they always, have really, I would say in the first 4 years, those first four state championships, they just dominated everybody. Mm-hmm. They never had to deal with battling from behind.
Yeah.
This season, during their run up to Ford Field, they had to battle from behind multiple times just to even grace the Ford Field stage. You just had that feeling, though, that even though they were against, a very, very good team in Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central, they were going to just tune it in and just take it to another level. And that simply didn't happen. But this young team, certainly, I think, will be back because they have so many young guys on that squad. And their conference allows them to be in state championship talks just about each and every year.
Well, I think there are two things about that team that will help them going forward. First of all, like you said, they have a pretty young team. They will return many, many players, many key players on that team. The other thing is, next year, they don't have the weight of the streak weighing on them. And anybody who's played sports and has been involved in a win streak and a streak of success, that kind of stuff can build on you. Now, clearly, I've never been on anything like a 69 game football streak. I mean, we're pretty good back in the day, but not that good. What you have with Ithaca is a bit of mythology that at some point the kids just aren't going to live up to, and that's what happened on Friday. Next season, they don't have to worry about that. The first time they win a game, the streak's at one. Well, a whole lot of other schools out there are going to have a one-game win streak after week one, too. So they're they're going to be just like everybody else. Yes, the name will mean something, especially in their conference. Other schools are going to say, hey, it's Ithaca. They're a big, bad Ithaca. Without that pressure to keep winning and keep the streak going, I think they could be back there next year and may even have 13, 14 in a row, or 14 to win the state title.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that you bring up that, Mike, because since I've been covering Ithaca, since I've been in this area, I tell you what, the big talk is always the streak. When I have Terry on when I'm talking to a player, I say, all right, I have to ask this question because it's been going on for so long. You guys continuing the streak, they give you the cliche answer, One game at a time, it's got to end someday. Hopefully it's not today. Well, Friday night was that day. And to look at, I was interested to see how the emotions would be from the players and from Terry themselves. It seemed more shock than sadness for me, Mike, because, again, they don't know. None of those players who played on Friday at 4:30 knew what it was to lose because they simply hadn't done it. I think it was more shocking than anything. And it's Monday now. I'm sure it's settling in. It's sort of a weird feeling for them. But, now going into Sexton, I want to talk about this Sexton game. Lansing Sexton falling to Grand Rapids South Christian 28-27, down one with under a minute left to play. You and I were both down there, Mike, and I just talked about how many tears were flowing because there seemed to be, there was a moment. I was actually filming the game, so I didn't even really look at the clock, and I couldn't tell how many seconds were left to give them at least one more snap to at least try something down the field. All of a sudden, I see them just collapse, and the tears just like a faucet just turned on right then and there. Such a sad moment for that team, but certainly admirable, seeing as though Dan Bogan, a man who hasn't been to Ford Field throughout his entire coaching tenure with Lansing Sexton, finally got there, but came up just a bit short.
Yeah, I believe if they played this game 10 times, I think Sexton would win 6 or 7 out of 10 times.
Gotcha.
What surprised me the most in that game is how Sexton lost. They came in with one of the best running games I have ever seen in high school football. And they went away from it very quickly, very quickly. It's like the first sign of adversity. All of a sudden, it's empty backfield, five split wide receivers. Sometimes he had Bell, one of the running backs out there. Sometimes he had Ray, one of the other running backs out there, split out. And it was all on Malik Mack's shoulders to make it happen. Malik played very well.
He played outstanding.
I was incredibly impressed at how well he played. But the bread and butter that got you there, to abandon it late in the first half and come out in the second half and hardly even go. They rarely even had a single player in the backfield. And in I formation, which they displayed, I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I have to say about 20-25% of the time they use an I formation out of first or second down. Didn't see that at all.
Yeah.
And it absolutely surprised me. It's easy to second guess Coach Bogan on his decisions a couple days later and knowing the result and all that kind of stuff. But even in the middle of the game, I kept commenting to some of my other colleagues at MLive who had not seen Sexton. I said, this is not how they play football. I have not seen this out of them before.
So you think they kind of abandoned the bread and butter that got them to Fourfield in the first place in that game, trying something different?
Yeah, and talk about a heck of a time to try something different.
Yeah, know? I know, right on the state championship stage, right?
And, you know, but again, Malik Mack really did shine in that game.
He did. I mean, looking at his numbers, 17 for 22.
Yeah.
224 yards. He threw two touchdowns. He rushed for one. I mean, my goodness, that's what I want to talk about. I mean, Malik Mack, I mean, this kid is a star, Mike.
Yeah, and I always knew he had a lot of potential, but you didn't really know how good he was as a throwing quarterback because, I mean, 22 attempts. I bet there are probably three, maybe even four games during the regular season where he attempted 22 total passes because they did run the ball so much. He really did a great job, and there were times where I cringed, because I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, man, here they go, another empty backfield. He's got to throw the ball, and he would complete the pass, or at the very least, he would make it so his receiver had an opportunity to catch it.
Right.
They didn't always catch it. Sometimes the receiver's going to drop a ball, but man, he really showed me a lot there. I was thoroughly impressed.
He was certainly impressive. And, I always say, Mike, when you talk about state championship runs or any game in the playoffs, I always say it's the little things that get amplified times 20 on that stages because everybody's good at this level.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Grand Rapids South Christian was taking on Lansing Sexton that Friday night. Mm-hmm. They're a good football team. Looking at their history, they got a storied history on the gridiron as well.
Yeah.
Now, looking at Lansing Sexton in those moments, though, again, they lost by 1 point, 28-27. It came down to that, for me, that missed extra point. And that really, I mean, who knows? If you make that, you probably go into overtime, and who knows what happens in that moment. For me, the little things really got amplified in that game.
Yeah, I think it's more than that, though, and I understand what you're saying there.
Right.
I think it's abandoning a tried-and-true game plan for something that had not really seen much of out of Sexton this year.
Now, do you think they abandoned that game plan throughout the entire game from start to finish, or did they just abandon it in the second half?
No. You could see in the first quarter, they were trying to get the running game going. I mean, they had Bell out there. They had Ray out there. They were switching it up. It looked very much like the Sexton I had seen, six, seven times this season. Then in the second half, they came out. I think they ran the ball once in like their first three plays, and then after that, it was let's just air it out. And that's a big change of game plan. I mean, it really is. And we spoke with Dan about it afterward, and I know you were there too.
Mm-hmm.
When he said they just didn't really give us very much on the ground, and so we needed to try something. And my knee-jerk reaction as an observer, not as a coach, not as a player, not as somebody who's on the inside, but just as an observer, my knee-jerk reaction is, do you really want to go away from that? I mean, Avante Bell is easily one of the best running backs I've ever seen, maybe the best running back I've ever seen, mm-hmm. and definitely one of the top two or three players in mid-Michigan. I mean, depending on where you want to put guys like Poljan or Jake Johnson or whatnot. But, why
go away from it?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are recapping the weekend that was for our three local mid-Michigan high school football teams that came up just a bit short on the big stage down at Ford Field, Lansing Sexton, Ithaca, and Lansing Catholic with Mike Cohan of MLive.com. Now, looking at the history of Lansing Public Schools, you brought it up, Mike, last week when we had you to preview those three games, and you brought up how, we haven't seen a Lansing Public School high school football team win a state championship. Well, we soon see that looking as though Lancey Sexton got all the way to the stage. What's the future outlook for Dan Bogan and his team?
The problem for Sexton right now is they're going to graduate a lot of talent. A
lot of seniors on that
team. Oh, yeah, a whole lot. It will be incredibly difficult for them to come back. They do have a lot of talent. I could see them challenging for the CAAC Blue title. Honestly, Lansing Everett is pretty good too. And yeah, I only saw them once this year, and I really liked what I saw. But they also have quite a few seniors. Eastern's program has been it struggled for a long time.
Yeah, they have. I believe Eastern got their first win in I don't know how many years against Jackson earlier this season. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's been a struggle for them. The thing that Sexton has going for it, and in Everett too, Dan Bogan and Marcel Carruthers. You have two coaches who understand kids. They get a lot out of kids, and they will continue to have success. Will they have state finals success? I don't know if either one will next year, but you know, if they develop kids over the course of the next couple of years, I mean, heck, why not? I mean, they could get back, or either one of those schools could get back there. The state of Lansing Public Schools in terms of football is really good.
Right.
Yeah, it's really strong. I mean, especially if you put Eastern aside and all of its struggles aside, the remaining two schools are still pretty good. I think next year, we can get to Catholic here in a second. I think next year, Lansing Catholic will be the best team in Mid-Michigan.
Now, I want to ask, Mike, why has it taken so long? Why has this never happened, you know, to see a Lansing Public High School win a state championship in football? Why hasn't this happened yet?
You know, I don't know. I honestly do not know. You have schools on the west side of the state that are rather successful. Other than Rockford and Kentwood, and Hudsonville, I guess, it tends to be the private schools out there, you know, mm-hmm. West Catholic and South Christian.
Right.
So, you know, the public schools are very good out there, but they also have private schools that are also very good. Obviously, Lansing Catholic is private, but it's the only private school in Mid-Michigan that has a football program. I guess Portland St. Pat, but they're eight man. So there is the opportunity there for the schools to build. I think one thing that would help, and this will never happen, but if the Lansing school is consolidated in some way, and there's been talk from the administration in the last few years to maybe close one of the high schools, that would consolidate the amount of talent into two different programs. It would obviously reduce the number of opportunities the kids would have because there would be fewer spots on only two teams instead of three teams,
mm-hmm. Right.
But I think it would make the Lansing schools much more competitive. You know, and I've said this for a long time, the enrollment at the Lansing schools has declined over the last decade because of the economy. Those kids aren't coming back. Those families that have moved away, they are not coming back. They moved because the mom and dad got a job somewhere else, and you know, LPS needs to make adjustments to do that. Yvonne Kamal Knuel, the superintendent of schools at LPS, she's had discussions about doing these kinds of things. Now, should she do these things to make the sports programs better? No, absolutely not. That should not be the focus of any of her mm-hmm. decisions.
Right.
But it's something that's been brought up before, and I think it would benefit the athletic programs as a side effect, as an adjunct to improving the schools themselves, perhaps.
Folks, if you want to weigh in on our conversation here on today's Current Sports, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, last but certainly not least, Mike, of the Saturday game, Lansing Catholic, they fell to Grand Rapids West Catholic 24-20. They were down 17-0. What led to that comeback? And I tell you what, that Tony Poljan is a pretty good player, Mike.
Yeah, you pretty much said it. What led to the comeback was Tony Poljan. This kid is, you know, he's a junior, so we'll see him again next year, and I can't wait to see what he can do next season. He's a bit of a monster, you know. He's about 6'7". I think he's really about 6'8". I mean, I've stood next to him
he's
a few
that
times.
Tall? My goodness.
He's listed as 6'7", but I mean, I'm telling you, I've stood next to people who are, you know, 6'10", 7 feet tall, and I mean, he's not quite that tall, but he's got to be more than 6'7".
He's
anyway,
a big kid. 230 as well, man.
I think he weighs more than that, too. But anyway, I'll tell you, he is a very, very smart quarterback. You could see his ability to make progressions during the game, to escape. His vision downfield was fantastic. We've seen him on the hardwood. I mean, you and I have seen him out there playing basketball
in
the past. And I had not seen him play football before, and I'm so glad I did. Even before Ford Field, when I had an opportunity to see Catholic play Portland earlier this season, he really impressed me. But to have a team fall behind three scores the way he did, and then for him to lead a comeback charge, man, he is just really talented.
Very, very talented. You know, I was reading some of the coverage as well from around the area, and, you know, Jim Ahern just raining down praises about where Tony Poljan could go as his career moves on with Lansing Catholic. And, you know, from that, I tell you what, you know, again, looking at his numbers, 24 of 34 for 269 yards, two touchdowns, ran for another 60 yards in a touchdown. I mean, the kid is really, really good. Why did Lansing Catholic fall just a bit short to Grand Rapids West Catholic?
I hate to say this. I think there were some coaching decisions throughout the game that did not make a lot of sense, particularly when they scored to bring the game within four, or five, rather, and then they kicked an extra point that made it a four-point game. If they go for two in that case and they convert it, they're back within a field goal. I mean, that all throughout the press box, I mean, I turned to the guy sitting on either side of me on Saturday, and I said, why are they not going for two? And everybody shrugged and said, yeah, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think that was part of you know, what bit him in the end. Now, granted, they ended up not losing by 1 point, mm-hmm. so I guess it may be a wash. But that kind of decision with quite a bit of time left in the game can affect decisions later on and how you, it's third and three now. Are you thinking about maybe throwing it and trying to pick up big yards, or are you just going to take the three and try to get the first down and nothing more? Those are the kinds of decisions that can be affected by being down three or being down four. And of course, you know, there's always the argument that, hey, if they don't get the 2-point conversion, they're down five. But I think four or five, it's all the same.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you still need a touchdown to at least, you know, exactly. Eclipse those, you know, to make up for that deficit, definitely. All right, what's the next season outlook look like for Lansing Catholic? I mean, it's got to be pretty positive with Tony behind center.
Yeah, and Tony Palmer too, the junior running back. Those two are by far the focus of their offense. Poljan, if he's not the best player in the area next season, it's got to be like some lineman who I didn't see this year or something like that.
Right.
I mean, he will be, you know, schools are going to line up to take a look at him.
And he plays both sides of the ball as well.
Yeah, he's a free safety as well and did a really good job. In fact, if you watch the game, West Catholic did not throw his direction very often because, I mean, he is so big. I mean, he can defend passes, especially when most receivers in high school are top out at, like, you know, 6 feet, maybe 6 feet one.
Right.
But he played well. He's very athletic, a very, very athletic kid. Lansing Catholic, I believe, will be the best team in the area next year. I think he has Jim Ahern has just really built this program in a very good, solid manner, and they will continue to grow. On the way here, and actually starting yesterday, I really started thinking about, okay, so which teams will be the best next year? I think Lansing Catholic, and I think Ithaca, again, we don't cover Ithaca at MLive Lansing. Our Saginaw Bureau covered them. But I think for the mid-Michigan area, for the teams that you take a look at, I think they should be up there as well, maybe 1-1A.
Folks, again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Call in, give us your thoughts on the incredible runs of those three teams, Ithaca, Lansing Catholic, and Lansing Sexton, or just your overall thoughts of this year's high school football season. I can't believe it's over now. I guess, Mike, you're preparing for the hardwood now in high school sports, right?
Yeah, I need to figure out what's going on there. I'm taking a few days to just kind of, you know, un-football eyes, at least high school football eyes, because I still have, obviously, NFL and college stuff going on.
Right.
But, I'm getting geared up for basketball and should start getting some stuff out in the next few weeks here. But, yeah, a little downtime.
Downtime. I tell you what, you know, hoops is my favorite thing to cover. I was a former player. And I tell you what, man, it's nothing like it. I love it. I can't wait for it. But I tell you what, it is bittersweet, though, because I will miss mid-Michigan high school football from around this area. Till next time, folks. All right. Well, Mike Cohine, Mike, thanks a lot of MLive.com. Mike, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks,
Al. All right, let's start our first break. When we come back, we've got a lot to talk about still, folks, including the MSU men's basketball team as they fell to Kansas yesterday in the Orlando Classic. And we'll sort of put a bow on at least the regular season for MSU football. You don't want to miss that discussion and so much more. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, we just wrapped up our high school football discussion on the three games that at least many from around this area cared about. Ithaca High School, they fell. Lansing Catholic fell, as well as Lansing Sexton, all falling on the state championship stage down at Ford Field. Thanks a lot to Mike Cohan for joining me. Now let's talk a little hoops, shall we? MSU men's basketball, folks. If you didn't know and happened to be watching the NFL and checking your fantasy teams out, there was also a game, you know, taking place, basketball game taking place with the MSU men's basketball team. They were competing in the championship game of the Orlando Classic, taking on number 11 Kansas. A very entertaining game, to say the least. I watched the entire game. Michigan State, though, came up a bit short. 61-56 was the final of that game. There were a few ugly numbers throughout this one as well, folks, that we will get to in just a sec. As we dive into this discussion, I now invite the man behind the glass, Alex Shark. How you doing, my man?
Hey, Alan, doing pretty well, and I don't know where you were watching that Michigan State basketball game, but I was back in Detroit enjoying the tender, juicy turkey back at home over
Thanksgiving. Yeah, how was your Thanksgiving, my man?
It was good. It was good. It was a good Thanksgiving, and yeah, like I said, the turkey was tender,
yes,
and I
was.
Got stuff, man.
Yeah, my mom, she threw down and had some of the most moist turkey I've ever had in my life. It was good stuff. I gained about 20 pounds. I need to hit a Planet Fitness after the show. So, but yeah, well, that's great. You had a great Thanksgiving, my man. And yeah, I was watching the game. I saw MSU, the men's basketball team, take on Kansas. I was at my mom's watching it with my stepdad. I tell you what, there are a few alarming things in this game that had me scratching my head. The most alarming one, I don't know if you caught this, Alex, but I didn't catch it until my stepdad had said something. I'm you know, this is the thing about Twitter, man. I tweet so much during the games. Sometimes when you're tweeting, you don't, your head isn't up watching the game, and you may miss something. And I missed a big moment. It was 30 seconds left, if you remember. 18 on the Kansas shot clock. Kansas has the ball. Michigan State down by 3. So if Michigan State plays solid defense, I mean, they got at least, you know, 10 seconds to probably, you know, tie the game or, you know, get fouled or you know, hit, just give them our opportunity to tie the game up and possibly put it in overtime. But MSU fouled in that moment and put the game out of reach, and I'm sitting there shaking my head. My stepdad's like, he's yelling. He gets up and starts yelling at the TV like, "What in the world are you doing? Why'd you foul?" And I'm like, okay, there had to be a logical reason behind this. And he's like, no, there's 30 seconds left. Kansas had 18 on the shot clock. It makes no sense. I'm like, no, there's got to be some logical reason. So we actually rewinded. Thank you for DVR. I rewinded the game, and I'm sitting there like, yeah, what in the world? Then I looked at Twitter, and Twitter's blowing up about it. Like, why in the world would Michigan State foul? Rico Beers tweeting me agreeing. I'm like, I don't know what that was about, but that really was that's what put the game out of reach for Michigan State yesterday.
Honestly, what put the game out of the reach was the layups that were missed.
That too, and that's another point. But ideally, I mean, they still had it. Let's say they play solid defense and get the ball, get the rebound, and get the ball back. They at least have a shot to tie that game in that moment, Alex.
Yeah, they would still have a shot potentially. But let's say Kansas goes down the court and then does make the shot. It's still less time in a two-possession game
But you can't foul in that moment. I don't know. It looked like they intentionally fouled.
Well,
and I'm sitting there,
I guess they wanted more time to run play. That's the argument you can make.
There's no argument you can make there. And even Izzo shook his head. Like, I think there was some miscommunication on the sideline because I think it was Costello who had the foul. And yeah, Izzo was kind of like shaking his head like, what in the world? And I'm like, I don't know. It was an odd moment in that game. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, yeah, that's what happened, but what you could say is that I agree that you probably didn't need to foul there, but it does give more time on the clock compared to the 15 seconds you would have if he missed. I mean, going down the court in 15 seconds and running a play for a good shot.
That's a lot of time.
For two possessions, though. If they made it, that's two possessions in 15 seconds, which is tough to do.
Well, that's the thing. You got to trust your defense in that moment, that you can come up with a stop when you need a stop to give your chance a shot to win that game. But, yeah, I mean, going to the other problems that led up to that moment.
Look, I'm not defending them. I'm not saying that it was the right thing
to foul. It was a stupid thing to do.
I agree that they didn't really need a foul. But,
not at all.
But you could make an argument that it would give you more time in a potential two-possession situation.
That's a reach. We're reaching for the stars with that argument. But I hear where you're going, Alex. I guess I hear where you're going. But, you know, you talk about those easy baskets, though. I mean, how many times did we see just blatant, easy layups? Specifically, Brandon Dawson had a moment. You talk about moments in the game. Dawson missed the easy bunny. Left-handed layup that would have made it a three-point game down the stretch. Point blank, Travis Trice had some point blank blunders as well. I didn't understand that. I mean, you talk about Brandon Dawson, the guy who, you know, had his first start since getting quote unquote well after this whole flu like symptom ordeal that he's been going through. You know, Izzo had a funny quote after that game that said, you know, he's basically saying it's not an excuse. You know, he was out there playing. And, you know, there's some guys that play well when they're sick and some guys that play bad. Then he goes on to say, Michael Jordan played well. So he brought up the flu game with Jordan. But again, you know, just easy bucket you cannot miss. 22 fouls on defense. 22 fouls on defense. And I was looking at a stat. There were like six or more players who had three or more fouls in the first half alone. I'm sitting like, you got to be kidding me. And then the turnovers. Now, granted, if you look at the stat sheet, and this is where numbers sometimes lie, Alex. The stat sheet said that MSU had seven turnovers. They did a relatively good job all game taking care of the ball. But it's when those seven turnovers happen. I call them timely turnovers, game situational turnovers. It's those type of turnovers that can bite you in the butt as the game goes down. One of those happened to be Valentine. Denzel Valentine had an off-arm push-off that gave Kansas back the ball. Then Valentine also had an errant pass out the post that led to a turnover. Those moments happen in crucial moments where you cannot afford to give the ball up. And then, you know, Denzel Valentine, Alex, I think we both going on record here on the show to say that Denzel Valentine is clearly the best passer on this team. The way he sees the court, it's very savvy. You know, Tom Izzo compared him to Magic when they first recruited him. Can you believe a guy who is so known for facilitating the basketball, Denzel Valentine, put up a donut in the assist column? No assist an entire game for Denzel Valentine. He had 14 points, though. That's alarming stuff. It was a weird game for this Michigan State men's basketball team yesterday afternoon, Alex.
Yeah, and aside from just the costly turnovers and like the pity situations, how about the fact that the rebounding, Al, when Michigan State plays a team that is about their height or maybe a little bit bigger, I just don't see them boxing out as much as they were against Santa Clara and some of the other teams that they out-rebounded. For Kansas, a lot of times at the end of the game when there were bad bounces, you'd see a lot of the players in the post just looking at the rim, you know, waiting and waiting for the ball to come back down. And you just can't do that in college basketball. Everyone's quick. Everyone's going to crash the boards. Even the point guards that got some rebounds down the stretch are gonna crash the board. So, you know, it's the little things like you said. It's the turnovers. It's the rebounding. It's some of those little things that you just got to execute. And they know it. And Izzo knows it too.
Yeah, but I tell you what, you know, Travis Trice, initially when I watched the entire game. Travis Trice, to me, it seemed like he was having a great game. You know, he was hitting buckets when they needed buckets. But if you look at his numbers, he went 3 of 14, folks. I had no idea he shot that bad in that game. He got a lot of his points at the free throw line. Brandon Dawson has to play better. Sick or not. You know, and Denzel Valentine kind of called out BJ after that game and said that Brandon has got to give us a better performance than what he gave us last night if we are going to have a chance to win. Brandon Dawson went 4 of 15. So, you know, from the big three, is what I like to call them, the veteran leadership on this team and Denzel Valentine, Travis Trice, and Brandon Dawson, those three got to play better. You can't shoot 3 of 14, 4 of 15. Valentine can't have any assists. I mean, those things just pile on against the good teams. Yeah, they might have beat a Santa Clara. They might have beat a St. Cloud State. You can't do that, though, against a Kansas team, number 11 in the nation. I want to give a shout-out, though, to Perry Ellis. That kid is going to be good at the next level. He's a junior right now at Kansas. Brandon Dawson had his hands full trying to contain him. And they switched Matt Costello on him. He couldn't contain him. He can hit the 15-foot jump shot. He showed tremendous effort on the rebounding block. Perry Ellis. And it's funny because Perry, a lot of people don't know Perry Ellis is a clothing line. Yeah. I guess they named him after a clothing line.
I wore it on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But Perry Ellis, man, this kid is good. I'm excited to see as his career takes over. Then, you know, you had a player in Cliff Alexander. He also gave MSU the Blues down low. Cliff Alexander, a highly touted recruit out of Chicago. If you remember, Tom Izzo went hard after Cliff Alexander, folks. He had a solid game as well. So if you look at, you know, the big teams that MSU has played in Kansas and Duke so far this year, they've come up short due to little things that have been amplified. Bad shooting, and I still am sticking with this statement, Alex. I think Michigan State is falling too in love. They have a love connection with the three-point arc right now that is costing them games, I think.
See, you would call it love. I would say that they're just still trying to find their wojo, if you will. They're still trying to find their kind of identity. I think they're relying on the shot is because you haven't really seen a lot of effort in the post this year.
But the thing is, when that jump shot is not falling, at some point you got to say, all right, I'm about to put the ball in the basketball. I'm going to take it to the rim and get fouled. And Trice did that a few times throughout that game. Bryn Forbes as well. When they put the ball on the basket, on the floor, excuse me, they got easy buckets or they got fouled and went to the line. They are falling way too in love. And, you know, granted, if you look at the stats, they are the best three-point shooting team in the Big Ten right now. But it's because they're shooting so much. And they are accurate from time to time. But it's like once they hit those first three or four, it's like, okay, this is working. Let's do this throughout the entire game.
Yeah,
it's got to be multifaceted.
It's not a typical Tom Izzo kind of offense where you're throwing up a lot of threes. But it's not to say that it doesn't work. There are great teams in the NCAA that have been very, very beneficial from shooting a lot of threes.
I agree. But
Even Final Four teams.
But I tell you what, they didn't just shoot threes. They also knew when to put it on the ground, get their big man involved. You have to be multidimensional in today's game of basketball. You cannot be one-dimensional. And that's right now what I'm seeing. They look kind of lost, too, in half-court offense. I'm concerned about the half-court offense as well. All right, well, let's talk about MSU football briefly. MSU football right now, they have finished 7th in the Associated Press poll, folks. They have moved up 3 spots after knocking off Penn State this past weekend, 34-10 on Sunday from Beaver Stadium. Now, with the move up to number 7, MSU matches its highest AP poll ranking of the season. Now, you know, looking at, you know, Michigan State this past Saturday, Alex, you know, I think the turning point in that game had to be after Connor Cook threw that interception in the second quarter, the response by the MSU defense, specifically Trey Wayans, that interception from Trey Wayans to save what could have been, you know, let's say Penn State scores in that drive, that could have been a 10-13 game, a very close game going into halftime. It could have changed the entire momentum of it. Trey Wayans, great, great concentration right before he steps out of bounds to corral that one to save a Penn State score. And then it's like you saw a different team in that second half. Jeremy Langford, who I think is one of the most underrated players, not just running backs, but players in the entire nation, man, is he good. 15 straight 100-yard games in the Big Ten Conference. That is remarkable. And then you had, you know, Cook finding Tony Lippett, and then it just kind of went from there. Michigan State closed out the year just as many expected, including me, after the Ohio State loss. They beat Rutgers, you know, they beat Maryland, then they finished the season off with Penn State. Solid year. And it's odd because, you know, again, you know, as I said at the top of the hour, any other year for Michigan State, you know, if we're winding the clock 10, 15 years ago, Michigan State would have had a 10-win season. I mean, my goodness, the praises would be raining down from everywhere. But now that you do, when you do something so often, the fans and the personnel and the community get used to it. 10 wins is kind of ho-hum now because Michigan State has done it now 4 of the last 5 seasons, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're talking about game highlights, Trey Wayans, aside from the pick, I mean, his coverage all day was perfect. He wasn't turning his head. He was with the receiver every step of the way. He probably was that defensive MVP for the day, Al. But aside from just that, when you're talking about the 10 wins, I mean, some of the players have said it. Mark D'Antonio likes to do little things like that before. Lippitt said it. Lippitt said, you know, they've done keychains before with the bowl logo on it. They've done little things, even if it's not what their main goal was, like going to the Big Ten Championship or going to the Rose Bowl. Mark D'Antonio does little things, and what does he do this year, Al? He gets some 10-plus win hats. They're all wearing the 10-win hats, the dynasty statement. So you said it, 4 out of the last 5 years, 10-win seasons. Only 6 10-win seasons in program history. So for Mark D'Antonio, out of the 10-win seasons total now, he has 4 of those in the last 5 years. That, for me, Al, says that it's a dynasty. And on top of that, I mean, to have the 10 wins.
You would go far to say dynasty?
I think
that's
so.
That's a strong word.
You don't think that it's a dynasty?
Well, how define dynasty for me? What's dynasty mean?
I mean,
in Alex Shark's definition.
For me, a dynasty is building a winning program.
No, stop it. Then there'd be a lot of teams that are not dynasty. For me, dynasty...
For multiple years now. I mean, not just
a dynasty
one-year
in what regard?
Program.
In as far as consistent success goes?
Yeah,
because there's multiple programs you can call a dynasty in. I think dynasty may be a too strong of a word. I would say Michigan State is establishing itself as one of the best college football programs on a consistent level year to year. Consistent success
is what this program is showing. What do you consider a dynasty then?
Oh, if you're a dynasty, I mean, you're talking like, you know, to equip it to success in other areas of sports. I mean, you know, for a dynasty, to be called a dynasty, you have to be just annihilating the competition year after year after year on a grand stage. I'm talking about like national championships, like, you know, the New England Patriots during the early 2000s, the Los Angeles Lakers with a three-peat, Chicago Bulls. You know, you got to be on that type of level to be a dynasty. Michigan State is just showing that, yeah, we're pretty good, and we're nothing to be messed with each and every year. So I wouldn't go as far as to say dynasty just yet.
Okay.
Maybe Alabama's a dynasty right now.
Okay. I'd still say that, I mean, at least for the Big Ten's concern, and maybe, yeah, they lost to Ohio State, but it's a very successful era.
Very. Right, yeah, that's good to say. Right. Very successful.
I'd say for Michigan State compared to past years, it's a dominant era compared to their past years.
Yeah, okay, there we go. Yeah, compared to past, without a doubt, without a doubt. And it's kind of an odd week now because Michigan State, they don't have a game this week. They will have to wait until Sunday to see what bowl bid they get. A lot of speculation. If the committee works in their favor, which I think it will, and Michigan State ends up in the top 10, it's going to take some extreme circumstances and a lot of sleeping pills during tomorrow's meeting with the Big Ten committee for Michigan State not to be ruled in the top 10. For me, when Michigan State is ruled in the top 10, they will possibly play in one of what is being dubbed as the New Year's Six Bowls, possibly the Fiesta Bowl, Peach, Orange, or Cotton for me. I think for them to play in that type of bowl will be and seeing what opponent they play, because they will play a big-time opponent in one of those bowl games, I think it's going to say a lot if Michigan State does win that bowl game as to where it's going to add to the success of this season, even though that they lost to Ohio State, even though that they lost to Oregon, and even though they won't be considered in the top four playoff, still, to play in one of those bowls, hey, you still have to tip your cap to this performance of this team so far.
It's great to play in one of those bowls, but at the same time, you want to make sure it's the right opponent, okay? Like, for example, you don't want to play one of the typical, you know, ACC seconds to Florida State, or, you know, you want to make sure that it's a legitimate team you're playing here. If you remember, MSU right now slated to play in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta against TCU. They beat TCU years ago. So for them to get TCU again, I feel like it would be somewhat of a letdown for this team. Sure, no knocking TCU here.
But TCU's been great this year.
Right, they're a better team. They have a Heisman candidate quarterback. They have a great high-powered offense, so that will be a great matchup against MSU's defense. But at the same time, I think that MSU at this point, like you said dominating competition. If I'm Michigan State, I want to play an SEC team and show that the Big Ten can compete on the national stage against a power conference.
Yeah, and that will all, of course, with the conference championship games this weekend. I mean, that will all depend on what happens. You know, how about Mizzou too? I want to give a shout out to Missouri. I mean, Missouri, big win for them. They will now play Alabama in the SEC championship game. You got Oregon. You know, it's going to be an interesting weekend of football to sit down and watch, and an interesting selection show on Sunday. I tell you that. All right, Alex. Well, about 5 minutes left in the show. Do we have our weekend winner music? Here we go. It's time for weekend winners, where we sort of look back at the weekend, the long weekend, Thanksgiving weekend that was in sports, and pick apart and choose who were our weekend winners. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, well, let's close out this Monday edition of Current Sports with our weekly weekend winner segment, where we take a look and everything that happened in the world of sports over the weekend and pick our weekend winners. Who had the best weekend in sports? I guess I'll start this thing off, Alex. You got to give a shout out. Big shout out goes to the MSU men's soccer team. Back-to-back Elite Eight appearances. It was a nail biter yesterday at DeMartin Stadium. I tell you what, as you know, they edged number 14 Washington in penalty kicks. It went to penalty kicks, folks, after it was tied in double overtime. Man, is this team good. I can't wait to, you know, we're going to have a special guest on tomorrow's Current Sports to talk about the unbelievable success that this team, and you talk about consistent success. I mean, back-to-back Elite Eight appearances, they are the only Big Ten team left in all of NCAA tourney play right now. That's impressive, Alex.
Yeah, no, very impressive, and exactly, that was one of my weekend winners as well, but To have the goals come so late in the game, to show the resiliency that you often cite, Al, on the show, is tremendous. I mean, to get the two last-minute goals, to send the PK for Fatai Alishe to have that huge goal at the end, that was great. And then, of course, thanking the Rowdies after the game, if you saw the pictures with that, that was pretty sweet. So, yeah, props to MSU Soccer. Any other winners for you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I always have a winner, then I have a loser. I really want to talk about what's going on at Ohio State right now. First off, and just talking about the game, JT Barrett, he's been a player and a quarterback that has really turned a lot of heads. I wish I could rewind time to Current Sports, and I may play the bite tomorrow, where, you know, we talked about, we gave a season preview and talked about Ohio State when the news just broke that Braxton Miller will not be the starting quarterback for this upcoming Buckeye season. Then I didn't even know who this kid's name. I remember talking about JT Barrett, like, oh, this guy's a freshman. JT Barrett, there's no way that Ohio State can even compete for a Big Ten championship, let alone win the whole thing. And this kid is a star. I mean, game by game, week by week, you know, he showed that he's got an arm on him. He's got, you know, he can hit the ground running. I mean, he's unbelievable, unbelievable talent. And then all of a sudden, what happens? Last game of the regular season, he fractures his right ankle, done for the year. And now, I don't even know, do you even know the guy's name who's starting quarterback now of Ohio State?
Yeah,
you know
Cardale Jones.
Don't even know anything about it. He's a freshman as well, right?
Yeah.
Cardale Jones. No,
I think he might be a little older.
Gotcha. I don't know anything about this kid. But now he has to play, you know, his first game is going to be starting this weekend in the Big Ten Championship game against Wisconsin. Man, even though Ohio State got the win this Saturday, there's a lot of people, you know, sad in Columbus right now.
The defense won it for them at the end of the game. I mean, yeah, Michigan was coming back at the end after Barrett went down, man. And for the defense with those defensive ends with Washington on the side to really hold Michigan and Devin Gardner, who was tremendous all game, that was pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And I tell you what, I don't even know if you can call the Michigan-Ohio State game a rivalry anymore. I mean, Ohio State just dominated. I mean, I think they won 12 of the last 14 meetings.
Hey,
between.
It's still a rivalry, but yeah, it's not an entertaining one.
It's looking, I tell you what, it's lost a lot of luster. I tell you that, because Michigan just hasn't been good for goodness, Lord knows when. But all right, so that's one of my losers. But also, you know, I wanted to dive into this discussion, which we will do tomorrow, when it comes to another big story that took place out in Columbus, Ohio. Costa Kara-George, he was a former Ohio State player whose body was found in a dumpster of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. And what makes this story, you know, so sad also has to do with the fact that he has had a history of concussions, folks. Now, we've always talked about how concussions are being related to unorthodox behavior when it comes to football players, and this may be another case of that. We'll dive into that tomorrow, folks. I want to extend a thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's edition of Current Sports. Shout out to Mike Cohan of MLive.com. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. And be easy, people.